Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On today's program, we take a look at Alzheimer's disease. But first, we turn to health workers' safety. Get this, hundreds of millions of people fall sick or are injured at work every year, and nearly 3 million workers around the world die due to occupational accidents and diseases. That's according to ILO, the International Labour Organization. An injury at work or a work-related illness can happen to anyone. However, some occupations can be more dangerous than others. The American National Safety Council reports that slips, trips, falls, overexertion, bodily reactions, and contact with objects and equipment account for at least 80% of all non-fatal injuries involving days away from work. The World Health Organization estimates that the risks for work-related illnesses in developing countries are 10 to 20 times higher than in developed countries, and few workers worldwide have access to occupational health services to keep them safe.
At Los Parra mines in Lobatera, Venezuela, workers start their day early in the morning. The town near the border with Colombia has 50 small-scale mines, each made up of 8 to 10 workers. And the responsibility of holding up the tunnels with only wood to prevent a collapse falls on the worker. And they say the lack of oxygen and little emergency equipment makes for precarious and exhausting work conditions.
There are problems with security. You face so much danger down there. Anything can happen to you.
A mining accident recently happened in Serbia, where 8 people died.
There is a huge grief. 8 miners of the Soko mine died in the early morning. They suffocated. So there was no explosion of any kind, nor anything else that happened. Simply, the concentration of methane was so high that they suffocated.
While mining tops the list of jobs that have risky conditions, workers' conditions can be dangerous above ground as well. For example, IQ Air, a Swiss air quality technology company, says India is home to 63 of the 100 most polluted cities in the world. And traffic policemen suffer from various respiratory issues and even heart problems. Doctors say long-term exposure to polluted air can cause health problems such as lung cancer and reduced blood oxygen levels that can lead to irregular heartbeats. According to the World Health Organization, only about 10% of workers in developing countries have access to occupational health services to protect them.
Many workers around the world risk their lives while performing dangerous tasks, and oftentimes, when an injury occurs, little or nothing is done to help them get compensated or treated. Let's listen to some workers in Angola who share their experiences.
My hand didn't come back to normal to be able to do what it did before. I do some things, but with difficulty. I lost the ability to move some of my fingers, so there are many things I can't hold. Some tools I can't pick up.
When I'm on the line, I have to wear a protective suit, a vest, the helmet, gloves, and knee pads. I have to keep 1 meter distance with my detector. And since I'm on this job, I never had an accident.
On that day, it started raining around 10 p.m. The tent was already in bad shape. With the heavy rain, the tent couldn't hold it and collapsed on top of me. I'm still under treatment, but on and off because I have no support from the company. They fired me.
Dr. Jean-Sylvain Bonny is professor of occupational medicine at the Félix Houphouët-Boigny University of Cocody in Abidjan, Côte d'Ivoire, and also head of occupational health teaching units at the UFR Sciences Medical Abidjan. He elaborates on issues related to workers' health in Africa.
When we talk about occupational health and safety, it's quite broad and includes different disciplines such as occupational hygiene, industrial hygiene. It is the discipline which aims to prevent and control all risks during working hours. There is also ergonomics, the adaptation of working condition to physiology and security. We have in our country several laws that make it possible to compensate the worker the labor code, the social insurance code, or social security. But one of the major challenges in our African country is the informal sector, which is often organized through associations, non-governmental organizations, etc. A lot needs to be done for the health and safety of the workers in this sector. The other challenge is training. It is important to train the human capital, the workers at all levels, from the nurse to the doctors, the first responders, the hygienists and others, which will make it possible to create a network in order to effectively take care of the workers. Also, being able to visit workers periodically before hiring and after illness. It allows us to anticipate the well-being of the workers. It is also important to have a prevention approach and not wait after an illness to see a doctor. My advice to people in the informal sector is to organize in groups, because it's more difficult individually, be it the mechanics, the craftsmen, the farmers or others. We, as experts, must go to these groups, the cooperatives, or provide them with the necessary elements to take charge of their health. It is important that as work, health and safety legislation involves the practice of occupational hygiene, ergonomics, safety and toxicology, as well as the support for workers' health and safety involves at the same time.
Professor of Occupational Medicine at the Félix Houphouët-Boigny University of Cocody in Abidjan, Côte d'Ivoire. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's is an irreversible progressive brain disorder that slowly leads to memory loss, destroys thinking skills, and prevents people from carrying out simple tasks. It often affects people age 65 and older, but early onsets of the disease can start as young as 30. According to the World Health Organization, Alzheimer's is the most common cause of dementia, a group of symptoms affecting memory, thinking, behavior, and the ability to perform daily activities. About 50 million people have dementia worldwide. Treatment for Alzheimer's temporarily improves symptoms of memory loss, but there is no cure. Results of an 18-month trial led by U.S. pharmaceutical producer Eli Lilly have shown its new Alzheimer's drug can delay the progression of the disease by up to 35.1%. However, the trial also showed that there were severe side effects that came with the treatment, and the results make it clear that the medication is mostly effective for those in the early stages of the disease. It is expected that the drug called donanemab will be approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. This will make it the third medication available to treat the debilitating condition in the U.S. Prior to this, a drug against Alzheimer's disease in nearly two decades received a conditional green light from U.S. drug regulators. Here is more.
This is aducanumab, called Aduhelm, the new Alzheimer's disease treatment by Biogen. The biotech company says the antibody drug reduces the toxic amyloid plaques deposited in the brains of Alzheimer's patients. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration has granted accelerated approval of the drug under some conditions.
What's important about this is that there was, of course, some controversy and very complicated sets of data that many people had different opinions about. But importantly, the FDA actually approved this under accelerated approval. Accelerated approval is unique. It is only reserved for those diseases or conditions that have seriously unmet medical needs. And so Alzheimer's is definitely one of those. We do not today have a way to slow, stop, or even prevent Alzheimer's.
Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementias and affects over 50 million people worldwide, according to the WHO. The abnormal proteins amyloid build up in the brain and lead eventually to brain cell loss and chemical changes, resulting in Alzheimer's symptoms such as memory loss. Biogen's Aduhelm targets amyloid by creating an immune response, but the drug's approval has drawn sharp criticism. An independent expert panel convened by the FDA say there is not sufficient evidence of Aduhelm's benefit and has recommended against approval.
The question is, does that have a clinically meaningful effect? One study that the sponsor did was positive and one study was negative. And I think the FDA felt that the data from the positive study were sufficiently encouraging to approve it on an accelerated basis such that the drug will be out and available to be used, but the sponsor must do another study to show clinical efficacy to keep the drug on the market.
Another challenge with the new drug is its cost, about $56,000 a year per patient.
In terms of the price, we think it reflects the value of the drug for patients. We applied our pricing principles with respect to value, sustainability, and continued investment in R&D for terrible diseases.
The last Alzheimer's drug was approved in 2003. The FDA says it will continue to monitor Aduhelm and is requiring Biogen to conduct a post-approval clinical trial to verify the drug's clinical benefit. Justine Mullen-Kanzadian for VOA News in Washington, D.C.
For more on Alzheimer's disease, I spoke with Dr. Mahmoud Maina, neuroscientist, educator, and researcher at the University of Sussex, United Kingdom.
Dr. Mahmoud Bukhara Maina, thank you so much for joining us. You are a research fellow and an expert in the field of neuroscience. Today we want to discuss Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is a disease that affects many people, especially the elderly. What is Alzheimer's? How can we understand it?
Alzheimer's disease is there. Brain disease that affects brain cells and it is irreversible. What that means is that once it happens, it recovered. Unlike in other systems where damage could be recovered. And one of the major things that Alzheimer's disease causes is the loss of memory. This is one of the early signs that comes with the disease. Thinking, and at the same time, changes in behavior, irritability, confusion, and eventually people lose the ability to be able to do the normal things that they are able to do. One of the certain things about this condition, unlike many other diseases, in this condition, you kind of lose yourself and your livelihood. You cease to exist even though you are alive, because eventually you lose sense of who you are and your family and people around you. So it's quite devastating.
Now, what causes Alzheimer's disease to develop in one person versus the other?
Yeah, so this is an excellent question. And the truth is, so there are different forms of Alzheimer's disease. We do have frequent in people younger, for example, in their mid-60s. And in this form of the condition, there are certain kind of genetics that do contribute to the condition. So, for example, there's a protein called ATP, which is amyloid precursor protein. Mutations on that particular gene has been shown to cause this early onset form of the disease. However, the most prevalent of this condition is the late onset form of the disease, which happens in elderly people, usually people above the age of 65, and as a person ages more, the risk increases. And for that, it's actually a combination of different things. So it could be lifestyle, obviously age, also gender seems to play a role, as well as some other vascular factors such as weight, obesity, diabetes, and even in aspect of genetics, those plays a role as well.
So how much of a problem is it in Africa?
Maybe we should look at it from two directions. At the moment, we don't know exactly how much Alzheimer's disease data. Unlike in other places like America, Europe, UK, etc., where the data is available from local health facilities to the all other facilities, and this data is collected from which an estimate is produced. In Africa, we really don't have that estimate. So most of the studies at the moment say that at the more in 2015 we had about 4 million cases of Alzheimer's in Africa, and this is supposed to rise to about 7 million, you know, by 2030, and by 2050 we are probably going to see about 15 million. You know, these are all estimates. So that is the problem. And then coming back to the issue of whether people are aware of it, no. Most people are not aware of this. And this is partly because we do have a lot of misconceptions about brain diseases. Oftentimes, people see brain disease as a problem that has to do with maybe, you know, someone has been possessed by a genie, or someone who has been, you know, bewitched by some other person, you know. So because of that, we really kind of confuse real cases of those conditions and real biological problems that affect the brain. So people are not aware. And this is why over the last probably 6-7 years, myself and a lot of other people have been organizing outreach activities to raise awareness around brain diseases.
So what is the message to people regarding brain diseases? And when it comes to Alzheimer's disease, what are some of the telltale signs?
My main message to people is that brain disease is not necessarily something that happens when someone has been bewitched. This is something that does happen normally. So just like someone would have diabetes, HIV, malaria, similar thing would happen with the brain. Just because it affects the mental mind, you know, the mental state, it doesn't mean that people should be scared of those individuals. In fact, people should try to kind of afford them support. And in fact, the government should have good policies to look after those people, to encourage them to come from poor communities or from rural communities for diagnosis and other things like that. But in terms of the science and other things, there are many different things. One of the major, major things is the gradual loss of memory. And obviously, there is irritability, confusion, poor or decreased judgment, you know, problems with thinking, language. So many different things now happen gradually. So the key message, therefore, is that when someone is aged and they start seeing the person having memory problems, they should not just say this is aging. They should try to observe that individual and, if necessary, go to a healthcare center so that the person would be seen by a proper health personnel.
What about treatment and care? What is available?
At the moment, there's no real treatment to stop the disease from progressing or to cure it. Most of the treatments do kind of help in alleviating some of the symptoms. So, for example, there are some treatments that are targeting people that have the early onset form of the disease, and that a drug particularly called rivastigmine or donepezil is given to people that helps with alleviating the memory problems. And apart from that, there are other drugs that are given to people with the moderate form of the disease, and also that is targeting the symptom. And even the recent drug that you mentioned, it's not fully certified to kind of have pure effective effect on the disease. This is why it has to go into post-approval to fully understand its efficacy. So this is why it is important for researchers around the world to continue working to really figure out what is going on. But in Africa, we do have a major challenge. And our major challenge is that even these drugs that are produced from in America, or those that have been approved in America and everything, access to those drugs is a big issue, you know, due to the financial situation. And apart from that, also because people don't really go to the healthcare, they will not even be aware of those things. So oftentimes people, you know, manage people with those conditions using traditional medicine, and sometimes by isolating them, which is really, really not good. So we need more researchers in Africa working on these
issue. And just to quickly mention something again in this particular subject, we don't really even know much about how this condition starts or progresses in Africans. And even the risk factors can be a bit different between Africans and other people. So we shouldn't always think that the research on, say, Alzheimer's disease conducted outside Africa is going to be 100% the same with conditions within Africa. And this is why the government and researchers within the continent need to do more as well in this area.
So, Dr. Maina, when you look at the issue of Alzheimer's today on the continent, where do you think going forward the priorities will be? I know you talked about the importance of research, but in the African context, do you see that awareness is even more critical before even talking about treatment, or is it just a combined approach where every aspect of this disease is equally important?
I like this combined approach, and the reason is because awareness is definitely very important to help people to go and get checked if they have problems. But also, I think research into treatments and other things is also important, simply because the cost of therapy is important in anything that you consider. If, for example, in other countries, it's going to be affordable, we have to think about in African context, would it be affordable? And therefore, research into these things within Africa, using our own resources, might help in unlocking some treatments that might be affordable. And one of these treatments, for example, for years or for centuries, Africans are known to use traditional medicine, you know, for treatment of diseases. And there are researchers working on that to see whether they are effective against our brain diseases like Alzheimer's. And I think those kind of researches should be encouraged, simply because it may help in kind of unlocking some therapy, which can be affordable to the people, if you see what I mean. So I like combined approach. And another thing that I should mention is that we should also kind of upgrade our healthcare system, specifically in terms of the diagnostic things related to these conditions. At the moment, there are fewer neurologists in Africa. I mean, some countries don't have even up to 20 or 30 neurologists. Even Nigeria, I think, based on estimates from a few years ago, there are probably about 80 to 100. So it is the neurologists that would even be able to make proper diagnosis of this condition. But even the neurologists are challenged by the lack of the facility. At the moment, most of them use kind of questionnaires and other things like that to make diagnosis. But in reality, to make diagnosis of such conditions, you need more than that.
Before we wrap, what else would you like to add?
So the only thing that I would like to add, not necessarily on my research, is that at the moment, you see, the life expectancy in most African countries is between probably 53 to 55 to 56. And it is expected that our life expectancy is going to increase. And as it increases, definitely the conditions like these will increase. And it is therefore absolutely important for our government to now start thinking about policies for management, for diagnosis, for all these different things, because European countries and other countries, America, etc., have already invested a lot in this area. And it is expected that in the future, their cases will go down. It is us, our cases that will go up. So if we don't really have that, package of management, research, etc., we might end up in a big problem by that time.
Okay, Dr. Mahmoud Bukhari-Maina, thank you so much for enlightening us on the issue of Alzheimer's disease. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Leonard.
That was Dr. Mahmoud Maina, neuroscientist, educator, and researcher at the University of Sussex, United Kingdom. Now to Cameroon, where a separatist conflict, now in its sixth year, has left thousands of people dead, while an estimated 2 million survivors struggle with emotional wounds. In Bafoussam, the capital of Cameroon's West Region, a trauma healing center is overwhelmed with requests for help. Anne Nzwanku has the story, narrated by Moki Edwin Kinzeka.
Every other week, Aminatu Musa goes to a speech therapy session organized by the Mission 21 Trauma Healing and Resilience Center. She's in her third session and still can't talk without crying. In 2018, Musa and her husband fled the conflict between government forces and separatist militant groups in Western Cameroon, heading for Nigeria. But along the way, she says her husband fell ill and died. Musa says that for nearly a year, she has not been able to sleep.
Most of the times when I come to center,
most of the time when I come to the center, I feel better. When I come to a meeting like this and I go back, I'll sleep a bit. After a while, the sleep will just disappear again.
The healing process begins with therapy in groups of up to 20 people. After that, therapists hold individual sessions with patients. Mission 21, a Swiss non-governmental organization, also organizes home visits. The center offers material assistance, but therapist Esther Mokong says that kind of aid is of limited help.
If you give me a business when I'm hurting, I will not do anything with that business. So when you heal me first and I'm fine and I'm relaxed, I can now be able to do something.
When Vanessa Ngang was 20, the crisis began and her husband was killed by the separatists. She spent 5 years battling illness and unemployment. After 3 months of treatment, she was able to start a new life in a sewing workshop.
So, what day we find?
I feel good. I learned a new skill and graduated. They opened my sewing shop. I thank Mission 21 for this initiative to care for people. From time to time, I still have memories of the past, but I am fine.
But I day me fine. When I go back, I cry. I come back, I day me fine.
Country coordinator Togo Lumumba Mukong says Mission 21 conducts about 120 counseling sessions per month, but demand is 3 times as high. He says the NGO wants to not only add specialists to its office, but also find a suitable solution for each family.
We think that we, as Mission 21, we cannot do anything without others. So we need local NGOs, we need even the willingness of the IDPs to work with us, and then we put our hands together, then we can all come out of this trauma, which is ongoing.
According to the UN, Cameroon's separatist conflict, now in its 6th year, has left thousands of people dead, while an estimated 2 million conflict survivors are seeking help to continue their education or find work. For Anne Zwanke in Bafoussam, Cameroon, Moki Edwin Kinzeka, VOA News.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lina Hmodu, in Washington. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends? Breakout artists? New releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays, at